Welcome to Resilience in Life and Leadership with your host, Stephanie Olson, speaker, author, addiction, sexual violence, and resiliency expert. Hello, and welcome to Resilience in Life and Leadership. And this is an interview that you want to hear. Charlene Madden has admittedly spent most of her life living in a state of darkness. And after experiencing over 9 years of sexualized trauma at the hands of her grandfather, and a decade of domestic violence and 3+ decades of mental illness and suicidal ideology, she was just 2 days away from taking her life when she attended a women's workshop where everything changed. She was able to take off her blinders, begin healing, and she found her purpose by turning her mess into a message of hope, evolution, and transformation that she now shares with people all over the world. Charlene is a mother of 3 amazing children, a wife and a daughter, and she does so much in the area of helping other women as an advocate and helping those who may have shared similar experiences or who are ready to make a shift in their own lives. Welcome, Charlene Madden. Hello, and welcome to Resilience in Life and Leadership. And I am so excited to introduce to you Charlene Madden. Charlene, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Now you have quite a story. So I'm just really going to let you just start wherever you think it best introduces us to you.
Okay. Well, I guess my story of resilience, I'll start at the beginning and how that kind of came to begin. I was born the last child, youngest child in a family of 4. I was born into a dysfunctional home. My parents were doing the best they could at the time, yeah. But my father was a severe alcoholic, and he tended to get violent when he drank. Most of the violence was directed at my brothers. They were half brothers, so they weren't biologically his. So, of course, they faced a lot of the abuse. And when I was just around 3, my mother decided to leave the marriage, and she had to make a really tough decision. She took my brothers and left, and my sisters and I stayed with my father. Basically, my father wouldn't allow her to take us.
Okay.
So she had a difficult decision to make to stay and risk, you know, the death of one of her sons or, you know, take the 2 she could save and go. And, my dad, being in the position he was as such a severe alcoholic, he was in no position to raise 2 girls. I had an older sister that was 4 years older than myself. So he contacted my maternal grandparents and asked if they would be willing to take us in. Mm. And my grandmother did not skip a beat. She said, absolutely, we will take the girls.
Wonderful.
My grandmother, kind of a saint in my eyes, she was absolutely a wonderful woman, very strong. Independent for her time period. She really believed in women working, getting a good education. Education was really important to her because she had very minimal education. So she pushed education, and she really taught me to be strong and independent. And that was a lesson that I may have taken and learned too well. So my grandmother was wonderful. Unfortunately, my grandfather, though, was a pedophile.
Oh my gosh.
From the time I was 3, 3 and a half until just over 12, my sister and I were both sexually molested by my grandfather.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And so it was this kind of situation where, you know, as a child, you don't want to say anything because, you know, I've already lost one family, and I'm afraid that if I say anything, I'm going to lose the only family I have left.
Right.
And my grandmother had become the sun in my world. So we just stayed quiet. It was when I was 12, my sister was 16, that she basically had a nervous breakdown. She had endured far worse abuse than I had, being as she was the older of the 2. And she had a breakdown and everything came out. And you would think, you know, that everything would be great. You know, we're not dealing with this abuse, but we lived in a really small town. So there's that stigma around it of, you know, you're the kid.
Absolutely.
Been molested as a child. And coming from the household that we had came from, there was even questions about whether we were being truthful about the abuse, whether we were just troubled kids that were trying to, you know, asking for attention and all these things. Awesome. Where that's the last thing you want attention for. That's no. Not something you want to be known for.
No. Now, how old were you then when it all came out?
I was just over 12.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah. I was in grade 8. So I was just getting ready to go into the high school. So, and I remember, you know, even at the age of 12, you know, sitting in the social services office, and these are some of the anchor memories that I have is the social worker kind of just patting me on the back and saying, don't worry, it's going to be okay. And I'm sure that was really, it was meant to be reassuring, I'm sure. But the fact was, there was no follow-up to all coming out. We didn't receive any counseling. There was nothing. It was like, okay, you're going to be fine. And out you go into this world to try to cope with these feelings and these thoughts and the emotions that you don't know how to deal with.
No.
So I go into high school. So now that's a whole different situation where, you know, I'm a young teenage girl who's already dealing with hormones and emotions.
Absolutely.
And my life changing. And I started to start to deal with depression even at that age. I think I was 13, 14 when it really started. I started cutting myself. I was just looking for a release of this internal pain, looking to externally, you know, take that pain away.
Yeah.
And I also started writing. Writing became a really important part of my life. And I always said that I poured ink out onto the page rather than my blood out.
Wow.
And the great thing about the writing is it was a great release. You could say all the things on paper that you couldn't say verbally.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The problem is, though, when you're writing, especially in school, is that it draws a lot of attention. And especially when you're writing about suicidal thoughts and ideologies. So my English teacher got a hold of the guidance counselor, who got a hold of a school psychologist. And now they bring me in and they do an assessment on me and they say, well, we just want you to know, like, you're bipolar, manic, depressive.
The school
psychologist.
Wow. Wow.
So you would think, you know, so now I'm at 15. I have no idea what any of those terms mean. Mm. And I remember, and here comes that anchor memory, the school psychologist patting me on the back and saying, it's okay. You're going to be all right. And I remember walking out of that room because there was, once again, no follow-up. So it kind of felt like the whole system, I fell through the cracks of the system through all the beginning. But
yeah,
I kind of felt like this internal anger of, I wish people would stop telling me I'm going to be okay because I don't feel like I'm going to be okay.
Right. Right.
And it just progressed and, you know, the emotions kept coming up. So,
you know, I think that's so important for people to understand. In my real work, so to speak, I run a nonprofit and we do prevention education on sex trafficking and human trafficking as a whole, healthy relationships, social media safety. But one of the things that we always teach our educators and try and teach when we're training whether it's people in the medical, anybody who works with youth, don't make promises you cannot keep, because, and they're all well-intentioned, but what people need to understand is when you are a child of abuse, there are all of these promises made to you on any given day. And so if one more person is making a promise that they're not able to keep, it's just one more person that you can't trust. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is so
just
difficult.
Another nail in that coffin of trust that you don't have in, you know, as a child, in adults.
Yes.
But then as you grow up into people in general. So.
Wow. So you're in high school. Now I'm just curious, how did your sister weather the storm up to this point? I know it's not your story to tell, but it just occurred to me.
I think she kind of was, she kind of did the same thing I did, as far as okay. we just tried to stick our head in the sand.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just tried to live life that, you know, okay, that happened. Let's just forget about it. Let's not think about it. Let's not deal about it, deal with it. Let's just try to, you know, she turned to alcohol as well. Like I mm-hmm. right away, you know, started drinking in my early right. teens, but that became my numbing.
Yes.
You know, every weekend it was, you know, you were going out and you were drinking just to,
yeah.
to number one, to fit in.
Right.
Because everybody was doing it and you just didn't want to be different.
Right.
Like, I think for me, it's like if people, when they ask, well, why did you start drinking? And it's like, well, when I say everybody was doing it, yes, of course, you're teenagers, you're mm-hmm. you know, dabbling and stuff like that. But I just wanted to fit in. I didn't want yeah. to be different. I wanted to be the same as everybody else.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah.
So we start doing those things just to blend in. So, and that's kind of where the masks come in. We learn to put those masks on and, yeah. and fit in. So
I can absolutely relate as a recovering alcoholic, started really drinking in my teens, but yes, I completely understand that piece of it. So then you are, in high school, or have you, left high school? Where are you then at this point?
So I finished high school. I did really well in school. It was so, like I said, education was so important to my grandmother yeah. that I just kind of, you know, I wanted to make her proud. I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to be worthy of her yeah. love.
Yeah.
And not getting good grades was how I did it. So I graduate high school and I decide that I am going to move, from the area that we're in. I move with my high school sweetheart. And we moved to the city, which is about an hour and a half away. And I think okay. this is going to be great because I'm moving somewhere where there's so many people I can just blend in and no one knows me. I can yeah. just go and be anonymous. And that started my pattern of geographically dealing with stresses in my life, thinking that, you know, if I moved away or if I move,
right,
everything will be better.
Right.
And so things are okay for a while, but they never stay okay. I mean, I didn't do any work on myself. Again, I just kind of threw myself into life. I got pregnant at 19. We decided we wanted to start having a family younger. So here I am. I have a child and I absolutely loved my daughter.
Yeah.
And then we have another child and I absolutely love that daughter. And I have another child and I absolutely love my son. But all this time I'm loving everybody else, but I'm not loving myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I struggled as a parent. I struggled with raising my daughters because of, my difficulty in the emotion, in the physical connection with my daughters, because yeah. it just always felt off. You know, I had those things in my mind of, you know, if I'm hugging my daughter, is it wrong?
Right.
Because at this point, I don't know what healthy and safe, you know, contact is.
Absolutely.
Done the work.
Right.
My son was completely different. I felt okay in that relationship. But with my daughters, I struggled a lot. So I get to this point, I am 28 and three kids in a marriage, own my home.
Yeah.
And I realized that I am slowly slipping down into a really dark place.
Wow.
And I can't dig myself out of it. And I realized that if I don't make a drastic change, my children are going to come home and find me dead because I just can't handle the pain anymore. And I think, okay, if I just get a break, everything will be okay. I just need to leave the house, leave my family, leave my kids, so that I can pull myself together and then just pretend like everything's okay.
Right, right.
So I leave the household. And at this point, my marriage had kind of disintegrated anyway. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot there. And I, within a month, jumped into another relationship. And this was with someone who had just left a relationship. So now we are two extremely dysfunctional people coming together. And we know how well that works when you've got dysfunctional people together.
Right.
My drinking got worse. My depression got worse. And on top of it, it was a violent relationship. There was domestic violence in the relationship.
Yeah.
Which at that point kind of just felt like that was everything I deserved. Because again, my self-worth was non-existent at this time.
Right.
And I keep going through this, and about 2 years into that relationship, I decide that I can't. It was after one night where I had been abused and he had left the house, and I just decided I couldn't go on. I went to the bathroom cabinet, emptied it of all the pills that were in there. There's, you know, he was on pain medication for a back injury. So I take all the pills and then I sit down on the couch and start writing my kids my goodbye letters.
Oh, wow.
I didn't want to leave without saying something.
Yeah.
And as I'm sitting there writing the letters, it just comes into me that I'm doing the same thing that my parents did. I'm leaving my children. I'm abandoning my children, and I'll never be able to come back.
Right. Like,
this is it. This is final. Am I prepared to leave my children? And at that moment, I knew I wasn't.
Wow.
I didn't want to repeat that cycle. I had tried so hard to not repeat the cycle. I think that's some of where my struggles came from, because I felt like I was just repeating this generational pattern.
Right.
And
right.
I had so much guilt. So I ended up driving myself to the emergency room. Well, actually, I called a cab, went to the emergency room, and ended up collapsing at the admissions desk and woke up with tubes down my throat.
Oh my goodness.
And it was at this point that my mother had gotten, she'd been notified that what had happened. And she was like, I think you need to move. You need to pack the kids up and you need to move out west. Now, at this time I was living in Ontario, so central Canada.
Okay.
And she's like, you need to move out west. And I thought, yeah, great. That's a great idea. I'm going to do that. Because again, here's my pattern of thinking that I can run away from my problems. Mm-hmm. Geographically, everything will be better.
Now, let me ask, so you then still had a relationship with your mom. Then what about your dad and your grandparents? Were you still in contact with them?
My grandfather, of course, no. I had not talked to him since everything came out. My grandmother, yes, of course, she was always a part of my life.
Okay.
My mother had been in and out of my life throughout my entire life. She had kind of randomly been in there. And my dad, I really didn't have much of a relationship with him. So it was, my mom was, you know, I think this was her way of stepping in and trying to make amends for some of the stuff that had happened.
Right.
So I moved out west and thought that this would be the brand new start that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And about 6 months after I moved, the gentleman I had been in the relationship with moved out to BC as well. And of course, as most women who are in abusive relationships, I believed everything that he said, that everything would be different. And I thought, okay, it's a fresh start, but it wasn't. It was just, again, it was just a geographical change, nothing behavioral changed. So we moved out 2003. So that relationship ended in 2015. And 2 months after he moved out of the house, I had a police officer show up at my work. And this had been a police officer who had been involved in domestic disputes that we had had.
Okay.
And he came into my work and said, hey, I just want you to know, I just came into work. Your ex-partner had taken his own life.
Oh my gosh.
And I was, of course, devastated.
Wow.
He had reached out a couple days prior to want to talk. And I had just been like, no, I'm moving on. I need to start a new life. So I carried some guilt there.
Yeah.
For a little while. And I was devastated because I had to tell my children. And this was a man who had raised my son, basically, because their own dad wasn't in their lives. So I went through the gamut of emotions. And of course, you know, drinking was my oblivion at the time. And I started to get really angry. And I remember everybody saying, it's okay. Anger is one of the stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm not angry that he took his life. I'm angry that he did it first.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Wow.
And I know, and when you tell people that, they look at you like, okay, right?
Yeah.
But I was angry because now I was left to pick up the pieces.
Absolutely.
Right? And I recognized that what this meant for everybody else who was left behind.
Wow.
And it was just a complete pull, you know. I didn't want to be here, but do I want to subject everybody to this pain?
Oh my goodness, that's horrible. Yeah.
And so I went on, you know, I had received a life insurance policy payout. And I thought, okay, what can I do? I'm going to buy a house. Of course, you know, I'm going to buy a house and this will be something for my kids. And when I bought the house, my intention was that this was going to be what was going to be left to my kids when I take my own life.
Wow.
Right. Because I knew, you know, it's like when you're sitting in the dark outside and, yeah. you know, it's at dusk and you can just feel the darkness is slowly creeping in.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. It was like, doesn't matter how bright I try to shine my light, the darkness is just going to get too much.
Yeah.
And I had actually set the date. I remember getting the keys, you know, to my house. And I was like, you know, taking the picture going, you know, this is probably the last happy picture anybody will have of me. And I had planned that the following month I was taking my life.
Wow.
And it's funny because it's not funny, but. The plan was I was going on a Monday morning because as we were talking,
yes,
you know, Mondays are
bad
right?
anyway. So
it's like, it's a Monday. Well, you know, don't go through this. So my plan was I was going to the same location. I had a hunting rifle in my car.
Wow.
And I just had to get through, like, you know, the time. And I had been invited to a woman's workshop by a girl that I worked with. And she's like, please don't make me go to this by myself. Like, you know, get your ticket. You'll have a great time. And I'm thinking, that's the last thing I want to do.
Right.
But I was so good at keeping that mask on.
Yeah.
Right. Like no one knew I was struggling.
Yeah.
Because I was a master at hiding it. And that's, you know, that's the one thing about when you live with it for so long, you become a master. No one knows.
Yeah.
And, I went to this women's workshop and I remember walking in and thinking, I don't belong here. You know, all these women are wandering around and they're talking excitedly. And I'm not a real girl's girl usually to begin with, but I'm thinking, oh my God, all these women are talking about how excited they are about their future. And I just need to get through 2 days before I kill myself.
Wow.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
And this is a Saturday morning and I remember listening, you know, a couple of the speakers got up and one's talking about finances and I'm like, I don't care because that's not going to be a problem for me. And someone gets up and talks about health and wellness. And I'm like, it doesn't matter to me anymore. Mm-hmm. And then a lady gets up on stage and she is bald because she has alopecia and she's up there and she's talking about self-love.
Wow.
And how hard it was for her to learn to love herself through all the struggles that she had gone through. And I'm listening to her and I can hear this little voice in the back of my head. And it kind of whispers, what about you?
Hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, if she can love herself with all of the difficulties that she's faced in her life, why can't I?
Wow.
And I kind of brush it off as it doesn't matter. It's too late now anyway. Then another speaker gets up and she starts talking about living with depression and mental illness and how she, after 20 years of struggling, she finally accepted the fact that this was part of her life and she was going to choose to live with it, not fight against it, but choose to live with it.
That's fabulous.
And again, I start hearing that voice in the back of my head, but it's a little louder this time. And it's like, hey, like, what about you? And I thought, well, you know, like, yeah, she's getting through it. You know, could I get through it? I don't know. And then the last speaker gets up and his name was Jared Morrison. And he's talking about living with mental illness, alcohol addiction, and addiction to painkillers. And I'm like, well, you know, like I'm kind of leaning in on this one. And I'm listening to him talk about how he had worked for a year to find that perfect mix of drugs and alcohol because he sold life insurance. So he knew he had to make it look like an accidental overdose, not a suicide. And he finally got his kids. He wasn't allowed much access to his kids, but on a night that he was allowed to have his kids, he found that perfect mix. Of all nights, that was the night that he found it.
Wow.
And as he's laying on the couch, slowly feeling his life drift away from his body, he hears a voice going, no, not now, not like this. And his kids are in the house, and he realizes that he's going to end his life with his kids.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
What his kids are going to find. And he manages to get to the phone, call 911, and he gets help. And he knew in that moment, of course, that he had to you know, get help, change his life. And he made a decision in that moment. He said that he was going to take all the crap that had been thrown at him in his life, and he was going to use it for good. He was going to go out, share his story, share his struggles in order to give hope to someone else. And I heard that voice in the back of my head. And now it's like screaming. It's loud. I can't push it away. I can't ignore it. And it's like, what about you?
Wow.
And it was in that moment that everything changed. I knew that everything I had gone through, my years of sexual abuse, my years of domestic violence, my years of alcohol addiction, my years of hating myself and not wanting to be here, I could take that all and I could use it to save someone else's life. Just like my life had been changed in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's what I chose to do. I went up to the speaker, the organizer of the event after it was over, and I said, I just want you to know this event has had a huge impact on my life. I would love to sit down and talk to you about it, but I'd like to come back and speak at your event next year. Now, I was not speaking, was not on my radar whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I wanted to pay it forward. Right.
Like, and you're talking next year, which is such a beautiful thing to hear, because your future had not been a part of your life.
Right. Wow. My future was like 2 days and then it was over. Wow. And now I'm like, no, next year I'm coming back.
That's neat.
And I did. And I did. And I went back the next year and I spoke at that event and I shared the importance of how stories are so important, because sometimes when you're in it, you can't see, you know, you're just, you don't see anybody else. I always say you don't see the forest for the trees, but I knew other people suffered and struggled with these issues, but to hear it.
Okay. So after I had spoken to the lady that had organized it the year prior, and she brought me in to speak. And so I'm on stage and I'm telling everybody the impact that stories can have on people's lives.
Yeah.
Because as I was saying, like, sometimes we feel so all alone when we're in it, even though we know there's people around us that are experiencing the same thing. You just feel so alone.
Yeah. And they're not on your radar at that moment. I think when you are in the midst of darkness like that, the last thing you're thinking about is other people's struggles, or even sometimes finding somebody else who has gone through that. So it sometimes has to be put right in front of you, just like those speakers. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I think you get into survival mode. Yeah. Right. That's all you're doing is just surviving. So you're not actually seeing anything that's going on outside of your, that little bubble that you're in.
Right.
So I remember getting off of the stage and, you know, I had said that in my experience and this, you know, everything I had gone through, that if I could save one life, that then everything I had gone through, the years of abuse, it would all have been worth it.
Wow.
And I got off the stage and I walked to the back of the room and I'm getting ready to go out just so I can kind of compose myself and take a breath. I had the lady approach me and she said, you know how you said you wanted to save a life? I want you to know that you did today. And she turned and walked away.
Oh my gosh.
And I was completely, I was completely shook to the core by it. And I was like, okay, then it was worth it.
You know,
like
that, yep,
exactly. It was all worthwhile. I can live with it knowing, but now I'm like, you know, one is great, but how many other people are out there suffering that I could reach and help?
Yeah.
So that was my thing, was like, okay. And I kind of talk about that moment when you find purpose.
Yes.
And because when you're dealing with depression and mental illness, you are kind of just existing. because you don't feel a purpose. And in that moment, that's when I was like, okay, this is my purpose. This is what I'm supposed to be out here doing. Wow. And so I have made it my mission to reach out to other women, to reach out to men, because I mean, men struggle so much and in silence.
Yes, that, exactly.
You know, they don't have the outlets that women do. You know, women can go talk to a friend and say, hey, you know, I'm feeling really down, or, you know, they can be more emotionally vulnerable than men can be.
Yeah.
So to me, you know, being able to break the stigma of men's mental health, it, you know, is my way of, you know, even though, you know, my ex-partner, the relationship wasn't good.
Yeah.
I still would not wish that on anybody. So that's my way of paying tribute to the people who have taken their lives and felt alone. So, wow. So I decided the lady that held the event that I spoke at, she kind of went after a couple of years, went, you know, enough, it's exhausting planning and running these things. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of disappointed because I know the impact these things can have on my life. Yeah. I sure hope someone else will step up and fill that role.
Aha.
And there's that little voice in the back of my head that goes, what about you?
Wow.
And I was like, what about me? Why can't I do it? You know, like I've got a great support network of friends. I've been to these events and I, you know, so let's do it. Let's talk the talk, you know, or that's not you know, walk the walk, not just
yes.
talk the talk.
Yes. So today then that is what you are doing. You are helping other people really find, I love this part of your bio that you found your purpose by turning your mess into a message of hope, evolution, mm-hmm. and transformation. And that's really what you're helping other people do as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. It's, I always just talk about, I just try to reach someone that maybe is at the same place that I was when I came to that workshop.
Yeah.
You know, because those are the people that, you know, I can talk to and I can relate with and say, hey, I know how you're feeling. You know, I was there. I sat in the dark.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I'll sit. I always say I will sit in the dark with anyone.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll also lift you up and bring you into the light because it's a great place to be. So,
amazing.
I've gone on to, you know, I've built my own workshop now and I went in and done my coaching certifications.
That's
and
fabulous.
Actually went in and did, I'm licensed as a Reiki practitioner now. So I've just taken it and went, okay, so how can I help people heal mind, body,
yes.
soul? What do you do?
Yes. So what would you say to people, that are struggling, that are suffering? What I have kind of a two-part question. What would you say to people who are suffering with depression, suffering with addiction, suffering with those things? And what would you say to people who have a plan to take their life?
My message that I always, you know, give people is it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because we have this stigma that it's not okay.
Right.
Like
exactly.
We have this belief that we're always supposed to be happy, that life is just supposed to be great, yeah. that we're never supposed to have these feelings. And it's like, you know what? It's okay to have these feelings.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel like crap. It's okay to want to stay in bed, and not get
yes.
up.
Yes. Yes.
You know, but it's not okay to stay that way.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's okay to feel that way, but it's not okay to stay that way. Yeah. Feel the feelings. Embrace them, acknowledge them, because it's when we push those feelings down and we don't deal with them,
right,
that they don't go away.
Right. Right.
You know, so I'm like, acknowledge it, work through it, because whatever we keep repressing, we're going to keep experiencing. It's going to keep resurfacing. So we need to, you know, feel those feelings, deal with it. And if you are in that state, reach out for help. And I know that's really easier said than done. And I get it because I was there. I had so many people that were like, hey, if you ever feel down,
yeah,
you know, call me. I had numbers on my bedside table for, you know, if I ever got to that position, you know, give someone a call. I had gone and seen a psychiatrist. I had been attending, you know, sessions, and my, you know, my thing was she had never experienced the things I was experiencing. So I didn't feel that relatability there. Mm. So I'm like, find someone who understands what you're going through.
Absolutely.
Because if they don't understand, you know, it's hard to have that connection. And there's so many support groups out there,
yeah,
both online and live. If you're dealing with addiction, you know, focus on, you know, getting through that as well, because we use those addictions to try to muddle our brains into not, yeah, dealing with what we're feeling.
Right.
So reach out, find a support, find someone who's experienced it and knows what you're going through and isn't going to judge. I mean, I don't judge anybody,
right,
who comes to me and says, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I get it. And I don't, you know, I don't judge. Everyone's situation is differently. So reach out. There's, you know, people you can contact where it's anonymous. You know, you can reach out, give a fake name, whatever. You can tell people your name is Charlene Madden if you want to, you know, reach out and ask for help, you know, but find someone that you know has experienced what you're going through. So
that's good. What would you say to the loved ones of people who are going through, whether it be depression or suicidality? What would you say to the people who need to be a support system, but just don't know how?
I would say the same thing to them. There's so many support organizations out there for the families of people who are either going through addiction, who are going through mental health issues. Be proactive, yeah, you know. Help is not going to come to us. We have to go looking for the help.
Yeah.
So find those support groups as well and educate yourself on what it is. I mean, I had so many people say, well, can't you just be happy? And I was like, yeah, I would love to just,
right,
be happy.
That's a great idea. You know? I've never thought, yeah, about that.
Thank,
okay,
you. Thank you. You know, so,
right,
yeah, but that's not educating themselves.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So yeah, if you've got someone in your life who is experiencing that, yeah, educate yourself as much as you can. But understand that there's only so much that you can do.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Because it didn't matter how much my family loved me. If I was going to take my life, I was going to take my life. There was nothing that anybody could have said or done.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I needed to love myself,
mm-hmm,
right? Like if you want to help someone, help them love themselves, right? Yeah. Like try, because until you love yourself, you're not, you know, life doesn't seem worth living. So.
And I think a lot of times there's that misplaced guilt. You know, if I would have just stayed on the phone with them, if I would have just, you know, let them know this, and people have to know that is not a choice you can make for somebody. That, it, yeah, that's,
yeah, and that's, and I, and from coming at it from both ends of that spectrum, right, where, you know, I was the person that was going to, right, to the person that had that person that did take their lives. You know, I had the misplaced guilt of, you know, if I would have talked to him, he wouldn't, yeah, have done it. Yeah. And I realized that that's not on me, and I don't have the right to take that on myself.
Right. That's right.
If I'm taking that guilt, I'm taking that to try to make myself feel better,
right?
Not because it's truth. So,
you know, I had this dear, dear friend of mine when I was in recovery. Well, I'm still in recovery for alcoholism, but when I was going through those steps and just really working the program, I was in the spot where I was making amends to people. And I was talking to this dear friend, and I said, you know, I made her start drinking again. She was in recovery, and I made her start drinking again. And she looked at me and said, you don't have that power. And I thought that, I mean, it was so profound, and it struck me so just like a lightning bolt, because that's that we think we have all of this power to change somebody's mind or do whether good or bad. But the reality is we don't have that power.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Self-responsibility was a huge concept for me to take, to really grasp because yeah, exactly. And I mean, I've had these discussions, you know, in the last year of my life, it's like, you know, when someone says, oh, you made me feel this way. And it's like, no, I don't have that control. You allow yourself to feel that mm-hmm. way. And it took that for me because I would be like, I feel so hurt because this person did that. And it's like, okay, well, let's dig down and find out
right
what that is, because it's not that person. It's something else underneath it. So,
yeah. Wow. So,
and that's part of building the resilience, right?
Yes.
Is understanding and taking the self-responsibility.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, is saying I'm going to own my life because, yeah. you know, I get to make the choices. The choices I've made have got me here. The choices I make can get me out of here. So that's I good. Take that responsibility.
That's good. So. And talk about the stigma of mental health and mental illness and all that is going on, because we are improving, I think, in the area of acknowledging that it's okay to not be okay, but there is such a stigma still attached to mental health issues. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I say that all the time. It's like, I look back to where we were, you know, from when I was a teenager to where we are now.
Right.
And, you know, yes, we have come so far, but the system is still failing.
Absolutely.
You know, I think of, you know, the kids in high school that are still struggling. And I mean, and it's, there's no way I would want to be a teenager in this day and age. There is just no, you could not pay me to do it. And they have so many more resources, but it seems it's so much more limited, if that makes any sense.
I think that's true. And I think just what has happened, you know, we go into the schools and we see these kiddos and the behaviors and the changes in what's going on. It's overwhelming. And they have been through so much. And now, I mean, there is so much more depression and anxiety. We weren't ready for regular depression and anxiety. I mean, we weren't ready to deal with what was happening already, and then add a pandemic on top of it, and isolation, and increased social media time, and all of that has just made it that much worse. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, as more aware as we are, I think we're almost less sensitive now as a society. You know, we're more sensitive and less sensitive in one hand or the other. Like we realize now that these kids are suffering. We're sensitive and we're aware of every experience that they're having, but we're less sensitive to how we're treating it. It's still not, you know, it's still not the way it needs to be.
It's not enough. It is definitely not enough.
No.
So, what would you say? Let me restate all of that. I want people to know how they can find you, but I do want to hear a little bit about the workshops that you're doing and how often you're having them, you know, what they look like, all that good stuff.
Well, right now my workshop has been I've been doing it once a year. That's my screen back there. It's called Ignite Your Life. Mm. And the first year I did it, I held it live. I was able to squeak it in right before the restrictions came. So it was small. It was about 30 women, but it was extremely impactful, which is what I wanted it to be. Yeah. This last year, and I hosted every November. This last year we did strictly virtual. Which, it restricts the connection, but it almost allows for greater connection because you can reach out to more women. I mean, I was lucky. I had a speaker come in from Costa Rica. I had a speaker come in from Colorado. One come in from Montana.
That's great.
One come in from Ontario. So my pool of people that can attend.
Yeah.
I look at it now, instead of being able to just impact the ladies that live locally and in my area, I can impact globally.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, fantastic. What I want to do. So, and I just finished a 3-day masterclass working through limiting beliefs. I held that in the beginning of January. So I've got a couple more that I'm planning in the next 2-3 months there. So I'm just trying to get myself a breath. So
I love that. I love that. And I just have to tell you, I'm so glad that you are here on this earth. And you deserve to be alive. It's so, and so does, you know, if anybody is feeling that, that pain, and I just need the pain to stop. That's, if you're feeling that, you deserve to be alive. And, it's a hard, moment to get through. It's a hard, you know, sometimes you do have to take it moment by moment by moment, but I'm so glad, Charlene, that you are here and doing such incredible work and truly changing people's lives. And, that's very powerful. You have an incredible story.
Thank you.
Thank you. So how can people find you?
Probably all the normals. I am on I'm on Instagram, Charlene Ann Madden on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook at Charlene Madden, speaker, author, women's empowerment coach. And you can also follow my workshop. It's Ignite Your Life on Facebook as well. And on Instagram as well. So
I love
like
it.
Like I said, if anybody's struggling, and they need just to talk to someone and they don't feel comfortable, message me on Facebook. I'm available 24 hours a day to take any phone calls, any messages, anything. If you're feeling stuck and you're scared, and, you know, please reach out. Like I said, I will sit in the dark with anyone as long as they need me to.
I love that. And we will put all of that information in the podcast notes. But that's amazing. Thank you. Okay. Last question. Mm-hmm. What does resilience mean to you?
I think resilience to me is being able to rise up from the dark and step into the light and share and shine your light from inside.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Well, I can't thank you enough. Your story is inspiring and gives, I know it gives hope to so many people. So thank you for what you're doing.
And thank you for providing the platform. I mean, I know you provide this, and you're putting the stories out that people can connect to, and the work that you're doing in your own life as well. It's thank you for the gifts that you're giving to this world.
Thank you. And thank you for listening and thank
it's Monday.
You. Yeah, it is so Monday. And thank you for listening to Resilience in Life and Leadership. And we will see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening. Please share with anyone you think will benefit from this podcast.